On 20th of October 2009, the Free University of Brussels hosted a conference on terrorism lists, executive powers, and human rights. The conference was organized by the European Centre for Constitutional and Human Rights and the Université Libre de Bruxelles, with the support of the Transnational Institute and of Statewatch, amongst other organizations. You are about to hear Challenging Arbitrary Regimes, the Case of the People's Mujahideen of Iran, a speech delivered by Professor Eric David, President of the International Law Center at ULB.
As is provided for in the program, I'm going to speak with you about the PMI case, which has already been quoted several times this morning, and for self-evident reasons, because it's true that the PMI case, in December 2006, was the first decision which came back, which changed the terrible decisions which were taken in the Qadi and Yusuf Barakat case in 2005, and also in the Ayadi case, also it was in September and in July 2005 for Qadi and Barakat, 2006 for Ayadi. And these cases were really awful, and fortunately, it was with the PMI case that things have changed a little bit. I would like to deal with you. My presentation will focus on 3 points. First, I would like to recall, for some of you who do not really know what is the PMI, the history of this movement. My second topic will be a brief examination of the case law of the Court of First Instance of the European Court of Justice. And I would like, in my third part, I would like to come back on some questions which relate to merit and which have been dealt with a little bit by Gilles Kerkhoff. Concerning the history of the PMOI, for people among you who do not know the PMI, PMI is a movement which participated at the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, to overthrow the regime of the Shah. At the time, they were allied with the Islamists, but very soon there were big differences between the Islamist movement and the PMOI, and a number of members, a large number of members of the PMOI were put to jail by the Islamist regime, and a very large number of them have been killed during their detention. And then the PMOI left Iran and found some asylum in Iraq. It was at the time Iraq of Saddam Hussein. Of course, you try to get the allies that you can get. Saddam Hussein gave weapons, out of date weapons, but weapons, however, old tanks or old Humvees and things of the like, which were given to the PMOI, and the PMOI from the 80s, from 1986 more or less, to beginning of 2000, they led from time to time armed actions against the Pasdaran, against the Iranian arm. And in 2003, States, as you know, invaded Iraq, and the PMOI immediately said, hey, well, neutral, well, we do not want to be to be involved in this conflict. The United States say, okay, if you are neutral, please give us all your weapons. And that's what the PMI said. The PMI left all his weapons to the United States. And it was from that time that the PMI fully decided not to use violence against the regime in Iran. That was more or less the story. And today, the situation of the PMI in Iraq is, I have to say, is very difficult because there are very strong connections between the Shia regime in Baghdad and, of course, the Shia regime in Tehran. And the PMOI has very great fears that it could be returned, it could be removed, the members of the PMOI, who are, for the time being, who are in Iraq, could be maybe, it would be, of course, the worst option, could be returned by the Iraqi authorities to Tehran. That's more or less the picture as it is today. Now, I would like to deal a little bit with you with the case law of the Court of First Instance relating to the PMOI. Well, it's not very difficult. In fact, it was on 12 December 2006 that there was this excellent judgment which was given at the time by by the court, and which decided that, in fact, considering the fact that the registration of the PMOI on the blacklist of the European Union did not state any reasons for that, considering the fact that the right to a fair trial, the defense right of the PMOI have not been respected, therefore the court decided to cancel not the common position because the court has had not this power to do that according to the treaty, the European Union treaty, but however they cancelled all the decisions which had been taken on the basis of the common position. And things did not stand there because anyway, the PMOI was always on the list, even if there was no more consequence about that, they remained on the list. It was last year on 4 December 2008 that it was finally decided they should be delisted. Always for the same reasons, mainly it's true that when the European Court will decide to cancel the decision of the Council to register the PMOI on the list, there was some opposition to them, especially from France. France said that we have an investigation, a judicial investigation, which has been initiated. It's that there is a claim against X. That was, and the court said that we don't know who is behind X. And consequently, it's not really serious. We don't have, on the other hand, any proof, any beginning of proof showing that some terrorist act could be attributed to the PMOI, and there was no possibility for the court to check, as the treaty gives it the power to check, to have a serious procedural check of what is necessary in order to fight against terrorism, at the same time to protect fundamental rights and liberties. And therefore, that's the reason why the decision to put the PMOI on the list was, at the time, was finally cancelled by the court. And this leads me to the last part of this presentation. It's about the rights which are at stake in this situation. As you know, the listing of an organization triggers very serious material consequences. As it has already been said, the freezing of assets of this organization. There are also a number of obstacles, of hurdles to the liberty of movement of the members of this organization. And in other words, a number of human rights, of basic human rights, such as the right to property, the freedom of movement, are not applied, are not respected by these decisions. Of course, it's possible to take this kind of decision and to deprive somebody of his or her liberty. It's, of course, quite possible to decide that somebody must be punished for a crime, for an offense, which is provided for in a criminal court. But in this case, in order to get this result, you need a judge to pronounce such a penalty, such a sanction. And in this case, there is no judicial intervention. And this morning, Gilles Kerkhove told us that in fact it's not, these measures are not judicial. They are administrative. It's an administrative measure. It's even said that it is a political measure. That looks like Baptiste de Tartan, you know, this monk in a hostel in the La Dame de Montsoreau, in the novel of Alexandre Dumas. It was avant de Dessin, you said it in English. Avant de Dessin. Okay, you have understood. The manager brings him a beautiful chicken. But he can't eat chicken because there is this religious feast, and he said, no problem, baptisme de tartan, et le tout résumé. That was the way the monk solved this problem. And in fact, it's not because, as Gilles de Kerckhove said this morning, it's an administrative measure, or it's a political measure, that because of that, you could escape the obligation to go before a judge, firstly because there is a real blow, there is a which is brought to a right, to human rights, I said, right of property, property rights, you have a right of movement, freedom of movement, and this kind of thing. And it's quite clear that such a decision, such a ruling, must be given after a serious investigation of the evidence, of the proofs which are brought by a prosecutor in order to prove that a crime or a criminal offense has been committed. And it is true that there was some change in the practice of the European Union concerning the lack of reasons when they decide to list a movement. It would be decided that, okay, we should give the reasons. And the reasons, in the case of the PMOI, it's not even a page, it's maybe 10 lines, but just asserting that, in fact, the PMOI exercised a number of violent acts against Iran, which is quite true, but that's all. It does not prove, as Yann Fermont just said a few minutes ago, it does not prove that these acts are terrorist acts. This is another problem. We have no time to attend this kind of problem, but it's a very important problem to know whether is it an arm of armed conflict, is it a situation of armed conflict, or are we in the case in the framework of terrorist violence? And another thing also, which was stated, that it was necessary that the defense right should be respected. Okay, how would the Council deal with this obligation? Well, it's very simple. They sent this letter, front page or half a page, to the organization, and they asked them to react. And if they react, or they don't react anyway, they consider that the rights, the defense right, have been respected. It's not really serious. It's not really serious. And it leads me to what Gilles de Kerckhove said this morning. I think that if you want that the European Court of Justice enters, really enters the merits of the case, it means that the European Court of Justice would become a sort of criminal court. The attitude which is taken by the Council with this naming and shaming on the list, and the material consequences are real criminal consequences for the organization or for the persons who are listed. And consequently, if you want to get some kind of real control about that, you can't escape the obligation to submit the case to a judge. Maybe it could be a criminal judge. Maybe it's possible that the European Court becomes a sort of criminal judge. After all, the sanctions, the penalties which are taken against firms for violations of the competition rights, or even against states, since I think 2002, if my recollection is correct, something like that, you see that the court, even if some say that that's not a criminal measure which is taken against a firm or against a state, it's just administrative. But we know what is the meaning of the words. And in fact, behind an administrative, what is presented as an administrative sanction, there is a real criminal sanction. There is a real way to punish the organization or the society or the state because it did not respect a rule or another. And that's exactly what happens with this case. By listing an organization, it's really a fundamental violation of some important rights and liberties, and consequently, according to Article 14 of the additional of the not the actual of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, everybody is entitled to a judge. Everybody can submit a case before a judge. This rule, Article 14 of the first additional protocol, has even been recognized by the Committee of Human Rights as a peremptory rule, a jus cogens rule. And however, you see that in this respect, the European Council do not respect what is really a peremptory rule, and that's something which is, of course, terribly regrettable and short future, things could change a little bit. Thank you very much.
You have just listened to the talk given by Professor Eric David at the conference Terrorism Lists, Executive Powers, and Human Rights, which was held on 20th of October 2009 at the Free University of Brussels. For further information on human rights and the global state of exception, visit the Equipo Niscor website and look for the page that deals with this topic. The original recording of Professor David's talk was made during the conference by Radio Niscor. This audio document was produced on the 21st of July 2010 at Radio Niscor's Belgian studios.